Chapter 32 Continued.
Voldemort's got Sirius.
What?
How do you... Saw it just now, when I fell asleep in the exam.
But where? How?
Said Hermione, whose face was white.
I don't know how, said Harry, but I know exactly where. There's a room in the Department of Mysteries full of shelves covered in these little glass balls, and they're at the end of row 97. He's trying to use Sirius to get whatever it is he wants from in there. He's torturing him. Says he'll end by killing him.
Harry found his voice was shaking, as were his knees. He moved over to a desk and sat down on it, trying to master himself.
How are we going to get there? He asked them.
There was a moment's silence. Then Ron said,
Get there? Get to the Department of Mysteries so we can rescue Sirius, Harry said loudly.
But Harry, said Ron weakly,
What?
What? Said Harry. He could not understand why they were both gaping at him as though he was asking them something unreasonable.
Harry, said Hermione in a rather frightened voice, how did Voldemort get into the Ministry of Magic without anybody realizing he was there?
How do I know?
Bellowed Harry. The question is how we're going to get in there.
But, Harry, think about this, said Hermione, taking a step towards him. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The Ministry of Magic must be full of workers. How would Voldemort and Sirius have got in without being seen? Harry, they're probably the two most wanted wizards in the world. You think they could get into a building full of auras undetected?
I don't know, Voldemort used an invisibility cloak or something, Harry shouted.
Anyway, the Department of Mysteries has always been completely empty whenever I've been...
You've never been there, Harry, said Hermione quietly. You've dreamed about the place, that's all.
They're not normal dreams,
Harry shouted in her face, standing up and taking a step closer to her in turn. He wanted to shake her.
How do you explain Ron's dad, then? What was all that about? How come I knew what had happened to him?
He's got a point, said Ron quietly, looking at Hermione.
But this is just so unlikely, said Hermione desperately. Harry, how on earth could Voldemort have got hold of Sirius when he's been in Grimmauld Place all the time?
Sirius might have cracked and just wanted some fresh air, said Ron, sounding worried. He's been desperate to get out of that house for ages.
But why, Hermione persisted, why on earth would Voldemort want to use Sirius to get the weapon or whatever the thing is?
I don't know, there could be loads of reasons, Harry yelled at her.
Maybe Sirius is just someone Voldemort doesn't care about seeing hurt.
You know what? I've just thought of something, said Ron in a hushed voice. Sirius's brother was a Death Eater, wasn't he? Maybe he told Sirius the secret of how to get the weapon.
Yeah, and that's why Dumbledore's been so keen to keep Sirius locked up all the time, said Harry.
Look, I'm sorry, cried Hermione, but neither of you is making sense, and we've got no proof for any of this, no proof Voldemort and Sirius are even there.
Hermione, Harry's seen them, said Ron, rounding on her.
Okay, she said, looking frightened yet determined. I've just got to say this.
What?
This isn't a criticism, Harry, but you do sort of... I mean, don't you think you've got a bit of a saving people thing, she said.
He glared at her.
And what's that supposed to mean, a saving people thing?
Well, you... She looked more apprehensive than ever.
I mean, last year, for instance, in the lake, during the tournament, you shouldn't have... I mean, you didn't need to save that little Delacour girl. You got a bit carried away.
A wave of hot... prickly anger swept through Harry's body. How could she remind him of that blunder now?
I mean, it was really great of you and everything, said Hermione quickly, looking positively petrified at the look on Harry's face. Everyone thought it was a wonderful thing to do.
That's funny, said Harry in a trembling voice, because I definitely remember Ron saying I'd wasted time acting the hero.
Is that what you think this is? You reckon I want to act the hero again?
No, 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 said Hermione, looking aghast. That's not what I mean at all.
"Well, spit out what you've got to say, because we're wasting time here!"
Harry shouted.
"I'm trying to say Voldemort knows you, Harry. He took Ginny down into the Chamber of Secrets to lure you there. It's the kind of thing he does. He knows you're the sort of person who'd go to Sirius's aid. What if he's just trying to get you into the Department of Mist?
Hermione, it doesn't matter if he's done it to get me there or not. They've taken McGonagall to St. Mungo's. There isn't anyone from the Order left at Hogwarts who we can tell. And if we don't go, Sirius is dead."
"But, Harry, what if your dream was just that, a dream?"
Harry let out a roar of frustration. Hermione actually stepped back from him, looking alarmed.
"You don't get it," Harry shouted at her. "I'm not having nightmares. I'm not just dreaming. What do you think all the occlumency was for? Why do you think Dumbledore wanted me prevented from seeing these things? Because they're real, Hermione. Sirius is trapped. I've seen him. Voldemort's got him and no one else knows. And that means we're the only ones who can save him. And if you don't want to do it, fine. But I'm going. Understand? And if I remember rightly, you didn't have a problem with my saving people thing when it was you I was saving from the Dementors, or," he rounded on Ron, "when it was your sister I was saving from the Basilisk."
"I never said I had a problem," said Ron heatedly.
"But, Harry, you've just said it," said Hermione fiercely. "Dumbledore wanted you to learn to shut these things out of your mind. If you'd done occlumency properly, you'd never have seen this.
If you think I'm just going to act like I haven't seen—"
"Sirius told you there was nothing more important than you learning to close your mind."
"Well, I expect he'd say something different if he knew what I'd just—"
The classroom door opened. Harry, Ron and Hermione whipped around. Ginny walked in, looking curious, followed by Luna, who as usual looked as though she had drifted in accidentally.
"Hi," said Ginny uncertainly. "We recognised Harry's voice. What are you yelling about?"
"Never you mind," said Harry roughly.
Ginny raised her eyebrows.
"There's no need to take that tone with me," she said coolly. "I was only wondering whether I could help."
"Well, you can't," said Harry shortly.
"You're being rather rude, you know," said Luna serenely.
Harry swore and turned away. The very last thing he wanted now was a conversation with Luna Lovegood.
"Wait," said Hermione suddenly. "Wait, Harry, they can help."
Harry and Ron looked at her.
"Listen," she said urgently. "Harry, we need to establish whether Sirius really has left headquarters."
"I've told you, I saw—"
"Harry, I'm begging you, please," said Hermione desperately. "Please let's just check that Sirius isn't at home before we go charging off to London. If we find out he's not there, then I swear I won't try to stop you. I'll come. I'll do whatever it takes to try and save him."
"Sirius is being tortured now," shouted Harry. "We haven't got time to waste."
"But if this is a trick of Voldemort's, Harry, we've got to check. We've got to."
"How?" Harry demanded. "How are we going to check?"
"We'll have to use Umbridge's fire and see if we can contact him," said Hermione,
who looked positively terrified at the thought.
"We'll draw Umbridge away again, but we'll need lookouts, and that's where we can use Ginny and Luna."
Though clearly struggling to understand what was going on, Ginny said immediately,
"Yeah, we'll do it."
And Luna said, "When you say Sirius, are you talking about Stubby Boardman?" Nobody answered her.
"Okay," Harry said aggressively to Hermione. "Okay, if you can think of a way of doing this quickly, I'm with you. Otherwise, I'm going to the Department of Mysteries right now."
"The Department of Mysteries?" said Luna, looking mildly surprised. "But how are you going to get there?" Again, Harry ignored her.
"Right," said Hermione, twisting her hands together and pacing up and down between the desks. "Right. Well, one of us has to go and find Umbridge and send her off in the wrong direction. Keep her away from her office. They could tell her, I don't know, that Peeves is up to something awful as usual."
"I'll do it," said Ron at once. "I'll tell her Peeves is smashing up the Transfiguration Department or something. It's miles away from her office. Come to think of it, I could probably persuade Peeves to do it if I met him on the way." It was a mark of the seriousness of the situation that Hermione made no objection to the smashing up of the Transfiguration Department.
"Okay," she said, her brow furrowed as she continued to pace. "Now, we need to keep students right away from her office while we force entry, or some Slytherin's bound to go and tip her off."
"Luna and I can stand at either end of the corridor," said Ginny promptly, "and warn people not to go down there because someone's let off a load of garrotting gas."
Hermione looked surprised at the readiness with which Ginny had come up with this lie. Ginny shrugged and said,
"Fred and George were planning to do it before they left."
"Okay," said Hermione. "Well then, Harry, you and I will be under the invisibility cloak, and we'll sneak into the office, and you can talk to Sirius."
"He's not there, Hermione."
"I mean, you can check whether Sirius is at home or not, while I keep watch. I don't think you should be in there alone. Lee's already proved the window's a weak spot, sending those nifflers through it."
Even through his anger and impatience, Harry recognised Hermione's offer to accompany him into Umbridge's office as a sign of solidarity and loyalty.
"Okay, thanks," he muttered. "Right, well, even if we do all of that, I don't think we're going to be able to bank on more than 5 minutes," said Hermione, looking relieved that Harry seemed to have accepted the plan. "Not with Filch and the wretched inquisitorial squad floating around."
5 minutes'll be enough," said Harry.
"Come on, let's go."
"Now?" said Hermione, looking shocked. "Of course now," said Harry angrily. "What do you think? We're going to wait until after dinner or something? Hermione, Sirius is being tortured right now."
"Oh, all right," she said desperately. "You go and get the invisibility cloak and we'll meet you at the end of Umbridge's corridor, okay?"
Harry didn't answer, but flung himself out of the room and began to fight his way through the milling crowds outside. 2 floors up, he met Seamus and Dean, who hailed him jovially and told him they were planning a dusk-till-dawn end-of-exam celebration in the common room. Harry barely heard them. He scrambled through the portrait hole, while they were still arguing about how many black-market butterbeers they would need, and was climbing back out of it, the invisibility cloak and Sirius's knife secure in his bag, before they noticed he had left them.
"Harry, do you want to chip in a couple of galleons? Harold Dingle reckons he could sell us some fire whiskey."
But Harry was already tearing away back along the corridor, and a couple of minutes later was jumping the last few stairs to join Ron, Hermione, Ginny and Luna, who were huddled together at the end of Umbridge's corridor.
"Got it," he panted. "Ready to go, then?"
"All right,"
whispered Hermione as a gang of loud sixth years passed them.
"So, Ron, you go and head Umbridge off. Ginny, Luna, if you can start moving people out of the corridor, Harry and I will get the cloak on and wait until the coast is clear."
Ron strode away, his bright red hair visible right to the end of the passage. Meanwhile, Ginny's equally vivid head bobbed between the jostling students surrounding them in the other direction, trailed by Luna's blonde one.
"Get over here,"
muttered Hermione, tugging at Harry's wrist and pulling him back into a recess where the ugly stone head of a medieval wizard stood muttering to itself on a column.
Are you sure you're okay, Harry? You're still very pale."
"I'm fine," he said shortly, tugging the invisibility cloak from out of his bag. In truth, his scar was aching, but not so badly that he thought Voldemort had yet dealt Sirius a fatal blow. It had hurt much worse than this when Voldemort had been punishing Avery.
"Here," he said.
He threw the invisibility cloak over both of them, and they stood listening carefully over the Latin mumblings of the bust in front of them.
"You can't come down here," Ginny was calling to the crowd. "No, sorry, you're going to have to go round by the swivelling staircase. Someone's let off garrotting gas just along here."
They could hear people complaining. One surly voice said, "I can't see no gas."
"That's because it's colourless," said Ginny in a convincingly exasperated voice. "But if you want to walk through it, carry on. Then we'll have your body as proof for the next idiot who doesn't believe us."
Slowly, the crowd thinned. The news about the garrotting gas seemed to have spread. People were not coming this way anymore. When at last the surrounding area was quite clear, Hermione said quietly,
"I think that's as good as we're going to get, Harry. Come on, let's do it."
They moved forwards, covered by the cloak. Luna was standing with her back to them at the far end of the corridor. As they passed Ginny, Hermione whispered, "Good one. Don't forget the signal."
"What's the signal?"
muttered Harry as they approached Umbridge's door. "A loud chorus of Weasley is our king if they see Umbridge coming," replied Hermione, as Harry inserted the blade of Sirius's knife in the crack between door and wall. The lock clicked open, and they entered the office. The garish kittens were basking in the late afternoon sunshine that was warming their plates, but otherwise the office was as still and unoccupied as last time. Hermione breathed a sigh of relief. "I thought she might have added extra security after the second niffler." They pulled off the cloak. Hermione hurried over to the window and stood out of sight, peering down into the grounds with her wand out. Harry dashed over to the fireplace, seized the pot of flue powder, and threw a pinch into the grate, causing emerald flames to burst into life there. He knelt down quickly, thrust his head into the dancing fire, and cried, "Number 12, Grimmauld Place!" His head began to spin as though he had just got off a fairground ride, though his knees remained firmly planted on the cold office floor. He kept his eyes screwed up against the whirling ash, and when the spinning stopped, he opened them to find himself looking out at the long, cold kitchen of Grimmauld Place. There was nobody there. He had expected this, yet was not prepared for the molten wave of dread and panic that seemed to burst through his stomach at the sight of the deserted room. "Sirius!" he shouted. "Sirius, are you there?" His voice echoed around the room, but there was no answer except a tiny scuffing sound to the right of the fire. "Who's there?" he called, wondering whether it was just a mouse. Creature the house elf crept into view. He looked highly delighted about something, though he seemed to have recently sustained a nasty injury to both hands, which were heavily bandaged. "It's the Potter boy's head in the fire," Creature informed the empty kitchen, stealing furtive, oddly triumphant glances at Harry. "What has he come for?" Creature wonders. "Where's Sirius, Creature?" Harry demanded. The house elf gave a wheezy chuckle. "Master has gone out, Harry Potter." "Where's he gone? Where's he gone, Creature?" Creature merely cackled. "I'm warning you," said Harry, fully aware that his scope for inflicting punishment upon Creature was almost non-existent in this position. "What about Lupin, Mad-Eye? Any of them? Are any of them there?"
"Nobody here but Creature," said the elf gleefully, and turning away from Harry, he began to walk slowly towards the door at the end of the kitchen. "Creature thinks he will have a little chat with his mistress now. Yes, he hasn't had a chance in a long time. Creature's master has been keeping him away from her."
"Where has Sirius gone?" Harry yelled after the elf. "Creature, has he gone to the Department of Mysteries?" Creature stopped in his tracks. Harry could just make out the back of his bald head through the forest of chair legs before him.
"Master does not tell poor Creature where he is going," said the elf quietly.
"But you know," shouted Harry, "don't you? You know where he is." There was a moment's silence. Then the elf let out his loudest cackle yet.
"Master will not come back from the Department of Mysteries," he said gleefully. "Creature and his mistress are alone again."
And he scurried forwards and disappeared through the door to the hall.
"You—"
But before he could utter a single curse or insult, Harry felt a great pain at the top of his head. He inhaled a lot of ash and, choking, found himself being dragged backwards through the flames, until, with a horrible abruptness, he was staring up into the wide, pallid face of Professor Umbridge, who had dragged him backwards out of the fire by the hair, and was now bending his neck back as far as it would go, as though she were going to slit his throat.
"You think,"
she whispered, bending Harry's neck back even further so that he was looking up at the ceiling,
"that after 2 nifflers I was going to let 1 more foul, scavenging little creature enter my office without my knowledge? I had stealth-censoring spells placed all around my doorway after the last one got in, you foolish boy."
"Take his wand!" she barked at someone he could not see, and he felt a hand grope inside the chest pocket of his robes and remove the wand.
"Hers, too!"
Harry heard a scuffle over by the door, and knew that Hermione had also just had her wand wrested from her.
"I want to know why you are in my office,"
said Umbridge, shaking the fist clutching his hair so that he staggered.
"I was trying to get my firebolt," Harry croaked.
"Liar!"
She shook his head again.
"Your firebolt is under strict guard in the dungeons, as you very well know, Potter. You had your head in my fire. With whom have you been communicating?"
"No one," said Harry, trying to pull away from her. He felt several hairs part company with his scalp.
"Liar!"
shouted Umbridge. She threw him from her, and he slammed into the desk. Now he could see Hermione pinioned against the wall by Millicent Bulstrode. Malfoy was leaning on the windowsill, smirking as he threw Harry's wand into the air one-handed and caught it again. There was a commotion outside, and several large Slytherins entered, each gripping Ron, Ginny, Luna, and, to Harry's bewilderment, Neville, who was trapped in a stranglehold by Crabbe and looked in imminent danger of suffocation. All four of them had been gagged.
"Got 'em all," said Warrington, shoving Ron roughly forwards into the room.
"That one,"
he poked a thick finger at Neville,
"tried to stop me taking her."
He pointed at Ginny, who was trying to kick the shins of the large Slytherin girl holding her.
"So I brought him along too."
"Good, good,"
said Umbridge, watching Ginny's struggles.
"Well, it looks as though Hogwarts will shortly be a Weasley-free zone, doesn't it?"
Malfoy laughed loudly and sycophantically. Umbridge gave her wide, complacent smile and settled herself into a chintz-covered armchair, blinking up at her captives like a toad in a flower-bed.
"So, Potter," she said, "you stationed lookouts around my office, and you sent this buffoon—"
She nodded at Ron. Malfoy laughed even louder.
"To tell me the poltergeist was wreaking havoc in the Transfiguration Department, when I knew perfectly well that he was busy smearing ink on the eyepieces of all the school telescopes, Mr. Filch having just informed me so. Clearly it was very important for you to talk to somebody. Was it Albus Dumbledore or the half-breed Hagrid? I doubt it was Minerva McGonagall. I hear she is still too ill to talk to anyone."
Malfoy and a few of the other members of the Inquisitorial squad laughed some more at that. Harry found he was so full of rage and hatred he was shaking.
"It's none of your business who I talk to,"
he snarled. Umbridge's slack face seemed to tighten.
"Very well,"
she said, in her most dangerous and falsely sweet voice.
"Very well, Mr. Potter. I offered you the chance to tell me freely. You refused. I have no alternative but to force you. Draco, fetch Professor Snape."
Malfoy stowed Harry's wand inside his robes and left the room smirking. But Harry hardly noticed. He had just realized something. He could not believe he had been so stupid as to forget it. He had thought that all the members of the Order, all those who could help him save Sirius, were gone. But he had been wrong. There was still a member of the Order of the Phoenix at Hogwarts. Snape. There was silence in the office, except for the fidgetings and scufflings resulting from the Slytherins' efforts to keep Ron and the others under control. Ron's lip was bleeding onto Umbridge's carpet as he struggled against Warrington's half-Nelson. Ginny was still trying to stamp on the feet of the six-year girl who had both her upper arms in a tight grip. Neville was turning steadily more purple in the face while tugging at Crabbe's arms. And Hermione was attempting, in vain, to throw Millicent Bulstrode off her. Luna, however, stood limply by the side of her captor, gazing vaguely out of the window, as though rather bored by the proceedings. Harry looked back at Umbridge, who was watching him closely. He kept his face deliberately smooth and blank as footsteps were heard in the corridor outside, and Draco Malfoy came back into the room, holding open the door for Snape.
"You wanted to see me, headmistress," said Snape,
looking around at all the pairs of struggling students with an expression of complete indifference.
"Ah, Professor Snape,"
said Umbridge, smiling widely and standing up again.
"Yes, I would like another bottle of Veritas Serum, as quick as you can, please."
"You took my last bottle to interrogate Potter," he said, observing her coolly through his greasy curtains of black hair. "Surely you did not use it all. I told you that 3 drops would be sufficient." Umbridge flushed.
"You can make some more, can't you?"
she said, her voice becoming more sweetly girlish, as it always did when she was furious.
"Certainly," said Snape, his lip curling. "It takes a full moon cycle to mature, so I should have it ready for you in around a month."
"A month?"
squawked Umbridge, swelling toadishly.
"A month? But I need it this evening, Snape. I have just found Potter using my fire to communicate with a person or persons unknown."
"Really?" said Snape, showing his first faint sign of interest as he looked round at Harry. "Well, it doesn't surprise me. Potter has never shown much inclination to follow school rules." His cold, dark eyes were boring into Harry's, who met his gaze unflinchingly, concentrating hard on what he had seen in his dream, willing Snape to read it in his mind, to understand.
"I wish to interrogate him!"
shouted Umbridge angrily, and Snape looked away from Harry back into her furiously quivering face.
"I wish you to provide me with a potion that will force him to tell me the truth."
"I have already told you," said Snape smoothly, "that I have no further stocks of Veritas Serum. Unless you wish to poison Potter, and I assure you I would have the greatest sympathy with you if you did, I cannot help you. The only trouble is that most venoms act too fast to give the victim much time for truth-telling." Snape looked back at Harry, who stared at him, frantic to communicate without words.
"Voldemort's got Sirius in the Department of Mysteries," he thought desperately. "Voldemort's got Sirius."
"You are on probation,"
shrieked Professor Umbridge, and Snape looked back at her, his eyebrows slightly raised.
"You are being deliberately unhelpful. I expected better. Lucius Malfoy always speaks most highly of you. Now, get out of my office."
Snape gave her an ironic bow and turned to leave. Harry knew his last chance of letting the Order know what was going on was walking out of the door.
"He's got Padfoot!" he shouted. "He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden!"
Snape had stopped with his hand on Umbridge's door handle.
"Padfoot?"
cried Professor Umbridge, looking eagerly from Harry to Snape.
"What is Padfoot? Where what is hidden? What does he mean, Snape?"
Snape looked round at Harry. His face was inscrutable. Harry could not tell whether he had understood or not, but he did not dare speak more plainly in front of Umbridge. "I have no idea," said Snape coldly.
"Potter, when I want nonsense shouted at me, I shall give you a babbling beverage. And, Crabbe, loosen your hold a little. If Longbottom suffocates, it will mean a lot of tedious paperwork, and I'm afraid I shall have to mention it on your reference if ever you apply for a job."
He closed the door behind him with a snap, leaving Harry in a state of worse turmoil than before. Snape had been his very last hope. He looked at Umbridge, who seemed to be feeling the same way. Her chest was heaving with rage and frustration.
"Very well,"
she said, and she pulled out her wand.
"Very well. I am left with no alternative. This is more than a matter of school discipline. This is an issue of ministry security. Yes. Yes."
She seemed to be talking herself into something. She was shifting her weight nervously from foot to foot, staring at Harry, beating her wand against her empty palm and breathing heavily. As he watched her, Harry felt horribly powerless without his own wand.
"You are forcing me, Potter." "I do not want to,"
said Umbridge, still moving restlessly on the spot.
"But sometimes circumstances justify the use. I am sure the minister will understand that I had no choice."
Malfoy was watching her with a hungry expression on his face.
"The Cruciatus curse ought to loosen your tongue," said Umbridge quietly.
"No!" shrieked Hermione. "Professor Umbridge, it's illegal!"
But Umbridge took no notice. There was a nasty, eager, excited look on her face that Harry had never seen before. She raised her wand.
"The minister wouldn't want you to break the law, Professor Umbridge," cried Hermione. "What Cornelius doesn't know won't hurt him," said Umbridge,
who was now panting slightly as she pointed her wand at different parts of Harry's body in turn, apparently trying to decide where it would hurt most.
"He never knew I ordered Dementors to go after Potter last summer, but he was delighted to be given the chance to expel him all the same."
"It was you," gasped Harry. "You sent the Dementors after me."
"Somebody had to act,"
breathed Umbridge, as her wand came to rest pointing directly at Harry's forehead.
"They were all bleating about silencing you somehow, discrediting you, but I was the one who actually did something about it. Only you wriggled out of that one, didn't you, Potter? Not today, though. Not now."
And taking a deep breath, she cried,
"No!"
shouted Hermione in a cracked voice from behind Millicent Bulstrode.
"No, Harry! We'll have to tell her!"
"No way!" yelled Harry, staring at the little of Hermione he could see.
"We'll have to, Harry! She'll force it out of you anyway! What's the point?"
And Hermione began to cry weakly into the back of Millicent Bulstrode's robes. Millicent stopped trying to squash her against the wall immediately and dodged out of her way, looking disgusted.
"Well, well, well," said Umbridge, looking triumphant. "Little Miss Question-All is going to give us some answers. Come on, then, girl. Come on."
"Hermione, no!"
shouted Ron through his gag. Ginny was staring at Hermione as though she had never seen her before. Neville, still choking for breath, was gazing at her too. But Harry had just noticed something. Though Hermione was sobbing desperately into her hands, there was no trace of a tear.
I'm sorry, everyone," said Hermione, "but I can't stand it." "That's right. That's right, girl," said Umbridge, seizing Hermione by the shoulders, thrusting her into the abandoned chintz chair and leaning over her. "Now then, with whom was Potter communicating just now?"
"Well," gulped Hermione into her hands, "well, he was trying to speak to Professor Dumbledore."
Ron froze, his eyes wide. Ginny stopped trying to stamp on her Slytherin captor's toes, and even Luna looked mildly surprised. Fortunately, the attention of Umbridge and her minions was focused too exclusively upon Hermione to notice these suspicious signs.
"Dumbledore," said Umbridge eagerly, "you know where Dumbledore is, then?"
"Well, no," sobbed Hermione. "We've tried the leaky cauldron in Diagon Alley, and the three broomsticks, and even the Hogshead. Idiot girl! Dumbledore won't be sitting in a pub when the whole ministry's looking for him!"
shouted Umbridge, disappointment etched in every sagging line of her face.
But we needed to tell him something important!"
wailed Hermione, holding her hands more tightly over her face, not, Harry knew, out of anguish, but to disguise the continued absence of tears.
"Yes?" said Umbridge, with a sudden resurgence of excitement. "What was it you wanted to tell him?"
We wanted to tell him it's ready,
choked Hermione.
"What's ready?"
demanded Umbridge, and now she grabbed Hermione's shoulders again and shook her slightly.
"What's ready, girl?"
The weapon,
said Hermione.
"Weapon? Weapon?"
said Umbridge, and her eyes seemed to pop with excitement.
"You have been developing some method of resistance? A weapon you could use against the ministry? On Professor Dumbledore's orders, of course?"
Yes,
gasped Hermione.
"But he had to leave before it was finished. And now we've finished it for him, and we can't find him to tell him.
What kind of weapon is it?
Said Umbridge harshly, her stubby hands still tight on Hermione's shoulders.
We don't really understand it,
said Hermione, sniffing loudly.
We just did what Professor Dumbledore told us to do.
Umbridge straightened up, looking exultant.
Lead me to the weapon, she said.
I'm not showing them,
said Hermione shrilly, looking around at the Slytherins through her fingers.
It is not for you to set conditions, said Professor Umbridge harshly.
Fine,
said Hermione, now sobbing into her hands again.
Fine. Let them see it. I hope they use it on you. In fact, I wish you'd invite loads and loads of people to come and see. That would serve you right. Oh, I'd love it if the whole school knew where it was and how to use it. And then if you annoy any of them, they'll be able to sort you out.
These words had a powerful impact on Umbridge. She glanced swiftly and suspiciously around at her inquisitorial squad, her bulging eyes resting for a moment on Malfoy, who was too slow to disguise the look of eagerness and greed that had appeared on his face. Umbridge contemplated Hermione for another long moment, then spoke in what she clearly thought was a motherly voice.
All right, dear. Let's make it just you and me. And we'll take Potter, too, shall we? Get up now.
Professor, said Malfoy eagerly. Professor Umbridge, I think some of the squad should come with you to look after.
I am a fully qualified ministry official, Malfoy. Do you really think I cannot manage two wandless teenagers alone?
Asked Umbridge sharply.
In any case, it does not sound as though this weapon is something that school children should see. You will remain here until I return, and make sure none of these,
she gestured around at Ron, Ginny, Neville and Luna,
escape.
All right,
said Malfoy, looking sulky and disappointed.
And you two can go ahead of me and show me the way,
said Umbridge, pointing at Harry and Hermione with her wand.
Lead on.
Chapter 33 Fight and Flight. Harry had no idea what Hermione was planning, or even whether she had a plan. He walked half a pace behind her as they headed down the corridor outside Umbridge's office, knowing it would look very suspicious if he appeared not to know where they were going. He did not dare attempt to talk to her. Umbridge was walking so closely behind them that he could hear her ragged breathing. Hermione led the way down the stairs into the entrance hall. The din of loud voices and the clatter of cutlery on plates echoed from out of the double doors to the great hall. It seemed incredible to Harry that 20 feet away were people who were enjoying dinner, celebrating the end of exams, not a care in the world. Hermione walked straight out of the oak front doors and down the stone steps into the balmy evening air. The sun was falling towards the tops of the trees in the Forbidden Forest now, and as Hermione marched purposefully across the grass, Umbridge jogging to keep up, their long dark shadows rippled over the grass behind them like cloaks.
"It's hidden in Hagrid's hut, is it?"
said Umbridge eagerly in Harry's ear.
"Of course not,"
said Hermione scathingly.
"Hagrid might have set it off accidentally."
"Yes," said Umbridge, whose excitement seemed to be mounting.
"Yes, he would have done, of course, the great half-breed oaf."
She laughed. Harry felt a strong urge to swing round and seize her by the throat, but resisted. His scar was throbbing in the soft evening air, but it had not yet burned white-hot, as he knew it would if Voldemort had moved in for the kill.
"Then where is it?"
asked Umbridge, with a hint of uncertainty in her voice, as Hermione continued to stride towards the forest.
"In there, of course,"
said Hermione, pointing into the dark trees.
"It had to be somewhere that students weren't going to find it accidentally, didn't it?"
"Of course," said Umbridge. though she sounded a little apprehensive now.
"Of course. Very well, then. You two stay ahead of me."
"Can we have your wand, then, if we are going first?" Harry asked her.
"No, I don't think so, Mr. Potter," said Umbridge sweetly, poking him in the back with it. "The Ministry places a rather higher value on my life than yours, I'm afraid."
As they reached the cool shade of the first trees, Harry tried to catch Hermione's eye. Walking into the forest without wands seemed to him to be more foolhardy than anything they had done so far this evening. She, however, merely gave Umbridge a contemptuous glance and plunged straight into the trees, moving at such a pace that Umbridge, with her shorter legs, had difficulty in keeping up.
"Is it very far in?" Umbridge asked, as her robe ripped on a bramble. "Oh, yes," said Hermione. "Yes, it's well hidden."
Harry's misgivings increased. Hermione was not taking the path they had followed to visit Grawp, but the one he followed 3 years ago, to the lair of the monster Aragog. Hermione had not been with him on that occasion. He doubted she had any idea what danger lay at the end of it.
"Are you sure this is the right way?"
he asked her, pointedly.
"Oh, yes,"
she said in a steely voice, crashing through the undergrowth with what he thought was a wholly unnecessary amount of noise. Behind them, Umbridge tripped over a fallen sapling. Neither of them paused to help her up again. Hermione merely strode on, calling loudly over her shoulder,
"It's a bit further in."
"Hermione, keep your voice down," Harry muttered, hurrying to catch up with her. "Anything could be listening in here."
"I want us heard,"
she answered quietly, as Umbridge jogged noisily after them.
"You'll see."
They walked on for what seemed a long time, until they were once again so deep into the forest that the dense tree canopy blocked out all light. Harry had the feeling he had had before in the forest, one of being watched by unseen eyes.
"How much further?"
demanded Umbridge angrily from behind him.
"Not far now,"
shouted Hermione, as they emerged into a dim, dank clearing.
"Just a little bit."
An arrow flew through the air and landed with a menacing thud in the tree just over her head. The air was suddenly full of the sound of hooves. Harry could feel the forest floor trembling. Umbridge gave a little scream and pushed him in front of her like a shield. He wrenched himself free of her and turned. Around 50 centaurs were emerging on every side, their bows raised and loaded, pointing at Harry, Hermione, and Umbridge. They backed slowly into the centre of the clearing, Umbridge uttering odd little whimpers of terror. Harry looked sideways at Hermione. She was wearing a triumphant smile.
"Who are you?" said a voice.
Harry looked left. The chestnut-bodied centaur called Megorian was walking towards them out of the circle. His bow, like those of the others, was raised. On Harry's right, Umbridge was still whimpering, her wand trembling violently as she pointed it at the advancing centaur.
"I asked you who you are, human," said Megorian roughly.
"I am Dolores Umbridge,"
said Umbridge in a high-pitched, terrified voice,
"senior undersecretary to the Minister for Magic and headmistress and High Inquisitor of Hogwarts."
"You are from the Ministry of Magic," said Megorian,
as many of the centaurs in the surrounding circle shifted restlessly.
"That's right,"
said Umbridge in an even higher voice.
"So be very careful. By the laws laid down by the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, any attack by half-breeds such as yourself on a human—"
"What did you call us?"
shouted a wild-looking black centaur, whom Harry recognized as Bane. There was a great deal of angry muttering and tightening of bowstrings around them.
"Don't call them that,"
Hermione said furiously, but Umbridge did not appear to have heard her. Still pointing her shaking wand at Megorian, she continued,
Law 15b states clearly that any attack by a magical creature who is deemed to have near human intelligence and therefore considered responsible for its actions...
Near human intelligence, repeated Magorian, as Bane and several others roared with rage and pawed the ground. We consider that a great insult, human. Our intelligence, thankfully, far outstrips your own. What are you doing in our forest?
Bellowed the hard-faced grey centaur Harry and Hermione had seen on their last trip into the forest.
Why are you here?
Your forest?
Said Umbridge, shaking now not only with fright, but also, it seemed, with indignation.
I would remind you that you live here only because the Ministry of Magic permits you certain areas of land.
An arrow flew so close to her head that it caught at her mousy hair in passing. She let out an ear-splitting scream and threw her hands over her head, while some of the centaurs bellowed their approval and others laughed raucously. The sound of their wild, neighing laughter echoing around the dimly lit clearing and the sight of their pawing hooves was extremely unnerving.
"Whose forest is it now, human?"
bellowed Bane.
"Filthy half-breeds!"
she screamed, her hand still tight over her head.
"Beasts! Uncontrolled animals!" "Be quiet!"
shouted Hermione, but it was too late. Umbridge pointed her wand at Magorian and screamed,
"Incarcerus!"
Ropes flew out of mid-air like thick snakes, wrapping themselves tightly around the centaur's torso and trapping his arms. He gave a cry of rage and reared onto his hind legs, attempting to free himself, while the other centaurs charged. Harry grabbed Hermione and pulled her to the ground. Face down on the forest floor, he knew a moment of terror as hooves thundered around him. But the centaurs leapt over and around them, bellowing and screaming with rage.
"No!"
he heard Umbridge shriek.
"No! I am Senior Undersecretary! You cannot unhand me, you animals! No!"
Harry saw a flash of red light and knew she had attempted to stun one of them. Then she screamed very loudly. Lifting his head a few inches, Harry saw that Umbridge had been seized from behind by Bane and lifted high into the air, wriggling and yelling with fright. Her wand fell from her hand to the ground, and Harry's heart leapt. If he could just reach it! But as he stretched out a hand towards it, a centaur's hoof descended upon the wand, and it broke cleanly in half.
"No!"
roared a voice in Harry's ear, and a thick, hairy arm descended from thin air and dragged him upright. Hermione, too, had been pulled to her feet. Over the plunging, many-coloured backs and heads of the centaurs, Harry saw Umbridge being borne away through the trees by Bane. Screaming non-stop, her voice grew fainter and fainter, until they could no longer hear it over the trampling of hooves surrounding them.
"And these?" said the hard-faced grey centaur holding Hermione.
"They are young," said a slow, doleful voice from behind Harry. "We do not attack fools."
"They brought her here, Ronan," replied the centaur who had such a firm grip on Harry. "And they are not so young. He is nearing manhood, this one."
He shook Harry by the neck of his robes.
"Please," said Hermione breathlessly, "please don't attack us. We don't think like her. We aren't Ministry of Magic employees. We only came in here because we hoped you'd drive her off for us."
Harry knew at once from the look on the face of the grey centaur holding Hermione that she had made a terrible mistake in saying this. The grey centaur threw back his head, his back legs stamping furiously, and bellowed,
"You see, Ronan? They already had the arrogance of their kind. So, we were to do your dirty work, were we, human girl? We were to act as your servants, drive away your enemies like obedient hounds?"
"No,"
said Hermione in a horror-struck squeak.
"Please, I didn't mean that. I just hoped you'd be able to... to help us.
But she seemed to be going from bad to worse.
We do not help humans, snarled the centaur holding Harry, tightening his grip and rearing a little at the same time so that Harry's feet left the ground momentarily. We are a race apart, and proud to be so. We will not permit you to walk from here, boasting that we did your bidding.
We're not going to say anything like that, Harry shouted. We know you didn't do what you did because we wanted you to.
But nobody seemed to be listening to him. A bearded centaur towards the back of the crowd shouted,
They came here unasked. They must pay the consequences.
A roar of approval met these words, and a dun-coloured centaur shouted,
They can join the woman!
You said you didn't hurt the innocent,
shouted Hermione, real tears sliding down her face now.
We haven't done anything to hurt you. We haven't used wands or threats. We just want to go back to school. Please let us go back.
We are not all like the traitor Firenze, human girl, shouted the grey centaur, to more neighing roars of approval from his fellows. Perhaps you thought us pretty talking horses. We are an ancient people who will not stand wizard invasions and insults. We do not recognize your laws. We do not acknowledge your superiority. We are...
But they did not hear what else centaurs were. For at that moment there came a crashing noise on the edge of the clearing so loud that all of them, Harry, Hermione, and the 50 or so centaurs filling the clearing, looked around. Harry's centaur let him fall to the ground again as his hands flew to his bow and quiver of arrows. Hermione had been dropped too, and Harry hurried towards her as two thick tree trunks parted ominously, and the monstrous form of Grawp the Giant appeared in the gap. The centaurs nearest him backed into those behind. The clearing was now a forest of bows and arrows waiting to be fired, all pointing upwards at the enormous greyish face now looming over them from just beneath the thick canopy of branches. Grawp's lopsided mouth was gaping stupidly. They could see his brick-like yellow teeth glimmering in the half-light. His dull, sludge-coloured eyes narrowed as he squinted down at the creatures at his feet. Broken ropes trailed from both ankles. He opened his mouth even wider.
Hagger!
Harry did not know what Hagger meant, or what language it was from, nor did he much care. He was watching Grawp's feet, which were almost as long as Harry's whole body. Hermione gripped his arm tightly. The centaurs were quite silent, staring up at the giant, whose huge round head moved from side to side as he continued to peer amongst them, as though looking for something he had dropped.
Hagger,
he said again, more insistently.
Get away from here, giant, called Magorian. You are not welcome among us.
These words seemed to make no impression whatsoever on Grawp. He stooped a little, the centaur's arms tensed on their bows, then bellowed,
Hagger!
A few of the centaurs looked worried now. Hermione, however, gave a gasp.
Harry, she whispered, I think he's trying to say Hagrid.
At this precise moment, Grawp caught sight of them, the only two humans in a sea of centaurs. He lowered his head another foot or so, staring intently at them. Harry could feel Hermione shaking as Grawp opened his mouth wide again and said in a deep, rumbling voice,
Hermy.
Goodness,
said Hermione, gripping Harry's arm so tightly it was growing numb and looking as though she was about to faint.
He remembered.
Hermy! Roared Grawp. Where Hagger?
I don't know, squealed Hermione, terrified. I'm sorry, Grawp, I don't know.
Grawp want Hagger.
One of the giant's massive hands reached down. Hermione let out a real scream, ran a few steps backwards, and fell over.
Wandless, Harry braced himself to punch, kick, bite, or whatever else it took as the hand swooped towards him and knocked a snow-white centaur off his legs. It was what the centaurs had been waiting for. Grawp's outstretched fingers were a foot from Harry when 50 arrows soared through the air at the giant, peppering his enormous face, causing him to howl with pain and rage and straighten up, rubbing his face with his enormous hands, breaking off the arrow shafts, but forcing the arrow heads in still deeper. He yelled and stamped his enormous feet, and the centaurs scattered out of the way. Pebble-sized droplets of Grawp's blood showered Harry as he pulled Hermione to her feet, and the pair of them ran as fast as they could for the shelter of the trees. Once there, they looked back. Grawp was snatching blindly at the centaurs as blood ran down his face. They were retreating in disorder, galloping away through the trees on the other side of the clearing. Harry and Hermione watched Grawp give another roar of fury and plunge after them, smashing more trees aside as he went.
"Oh, no," said Hermione, quaking so badly that her knees gave way. "Oh, that was horrible! And he might kill them all!"
"I'm not that fussed, to be honest," said Harry bitterly. The sounds of the galloping centaurs and the blundering giant grew fainter and fainter. As Harry listened to them, his scar gave another great throb, and a wave of terror swept over him. They had wasted so much time. They were even further from rescuing Sirius than they had been when he had had the vision. Not only had Harry managed to lose his wand, but they were stuck in the middle of the Forbidden Forest with no means of transport whatsoever. "Smart plan," he spat at Hermione, having to release some of his fury. "Really smart plan. Where do we go from here?"
"We need to get back up to the castle," said Hermione faintly.
"By the time we've done that, Sirius will probably be dead," said Harry, kicking a nearby tree in temper. A high-pitched chattering started up overhead, and he looked up to see an angry Bowtruckle flexing its long, twig-like fingers at him.
"Well, we can't do anything without wands," said Hermione hopelessly, dragging herself up again. "Anyway, Harry, how exactly were you planning to get all the way to London?"
"Yeah, we were just wondering that," said a familiar voice from behind her. Harry and Hermione moved together instinctively and peered through the trees. Ron came into sight, with Ginny, Neville, and Luna hurrying along behind him. All of them looked a little the worse for wear. There were several long scratches running the length of Ginny's cheek. A large purple lump was swelling above Neville's right eye. Ron's lip was bleeding worse than ever. But all were looking rather pleased with themselves. "So," said Ron, pushing aside a low-hanging branch and holding out Harry's wand. "Had any ideas?"
"How did you get away?"
asked Harry in amazement, taking his wand from Ron. "Couple of stunners, a disarming charm. Neville brought off a really nice little impediment, Jinx," said Ron airily, now handing back Hermione's wand too. But Ginny was best. She got Malfoy, bat bogey hex. It was superb. His whole face was covered in the great flapping things. "Anyway, we saw you out of the window heading into the forest and followed. What have you done with Umbridge?"
"She got carried away," said Harry, "by a herd of centaurs."
"And they left you behind?"
asked Ginny, looking astonished.
"No, they got chased off by Grawp," said Harry.
"Who's Grawp?" Luna asked interestedly.
"Hagrid's little brother," said Ron promptly.
"Anyway, never mind that now. Harry, what did you find out in the fire? Has you know who got Sirius, or—"
"Yes," said Harry, as his scar gave another painful prickle. "And I'm sure Sirius is still alive. But I can't see how we're going to get there to help him."
They all fell silent, looking rather scared. The problem facing them seemed insurmountable.
"Well, we'll have to fly, won't we?" said Luna, in the closest thing to a matter-of-fact voice Harry had ever heard her use.
"Okay," said Harry irritably, rounding on her. First of all, we aren't doing anything, if you're including yourself in that, and second of all, Ron's the only one with a broomstick that isn't being guarded by a security troll. So,
I've got a broom, said Ginny.
Yeah, but you're not coming, said Ron angrily.
Excuse me, but I care what happens to Sirius as much as you do, said Ginny,
her jaw set so that her resemblance to Fred and George was suddenly striking.
You're too...
Harry began, but Ginny said fiercely,
I'm 3 years older than you were when you fought you-know-who over the Philosopher's Stone, and it's because of me that Malfoy's stuck back in Umbridge's office with giant flying bogies attacking him.
Yeah, but we were all in the DA together, said Neville quietly. It was all supposed to be about fighting you-know-who, wasn't it? And this is the first chance we've had to do something real. Or was that all just a game or something?
No, of course it wasn't, said Harry impatiently.
Then we should come too, said Neville simply.
We want to help.
That's right, said Luna, smiling happily. Harry's eyes met Ron's. He knew Ron was thinking exactly what he was. If he could have chosen any members of the DA, in addition to himself, Ron and Hermione, to join him in the attempt to rescue Sirius, he would not have picked Ginny, Neville, or Luna.
"Well, it doesn't matter anyway," said Harry frustratedly, "because we still don't know how to get there."
"I thought we'd settled that," said Luna maddeningly. "We're flying."
"Look," said Ron, barely containing his anger, "you might be able to fly without a broomstick, but the rest of us can't sprout wings whenever we—"
"There are ways of flying other than with broomsticks," said Luna serenely.
"I suppose we're going to ride on the back of the khaki snorgle or whatever it is," Ron demanded.
"The crumple-horned snorkack can't fly," said Luna in a dignified voice. "But they can, and Hagrid says they're very good at finding places their riders are looking for."
Harry whirled round. Standing between two trees, their white eyes gleaming eerily, were two thestrals, watching the whispered conversation as though they understood every word.
"Yes," he whispered, moving towards them. They tossed their reptilian heads, throwing back long black manes, and Harry stretched out his hand eagerly and patted the nearest one's shining neck. How could he ever have thought them ugly?
"Is it those mad horse things?" said Ron uncertainly, staring at a point slightly to the left of the thestral Harry was patting. "Those ones you can't see unless you've watched someone snuff it?"
"Yeah," said Harry.
"How many?"
"Just two."
"Well, we need three,"
said Hermione, who was still looking a little shaken, but determined just the same.
"Four, Hermione," said Ginny, scowling.
"I think there are six of us, actually," said Luna calmly, counting.
"Don't be stupid. We can't all go," said Harry angrily. "Look, you three," he pointed at Neville, Ginny and Luna, "you're not involved in this. You're not..."
They burst into more protests. His scar gave another more painful twinge. Every moment they delayed was precious. He did not have time to argue.
"Okay, fine, it's your choice," he said curtly. "But unless we can find more thestrals, you're not going to be able—"
"Oh, more of them will come," said Ginny confidently, who, like Ron, was squinting in quite the wrong direction, apparently under the impression that she was looking at the horses.
"What makes you think that?"
"Because, in case you hadn't noticed, you and Hermione are both covered in blood," she said coolly.
"And we know Hagrid lures thestrals with raw meat. That's probably why these two turned up in the first place."
Harry felt a soft tug on his robes at that moment, and looked down to see the closest thestral licking his sleeve, which was damp with Grawp's blood.
"Okay, then," he said, a bright idea occurring. "Ron and I will take these two and go ahead, and Hermione can stay here with you three, and she'll attract more thestrals." "I'm not staying behind," said Hermione furiously.
"There's no need," said Luna, smiling. "Look, here come more now. You two must really smell—" Harry turned. No fewer than six or seven thestrals were picking their way through the trees.
their great leathery wings folded tight to their bodies, their eyes gleaming through the darkness. He had no excuse now.
"All right," he said, angrily. "Pick one and get on, then."
Chapter 34. The Department of Mysteries. Harry wound his hand tightly into the mane of the nearest thestral, placed a foot on a stump nearby, and scrambled clumsily onto the horse's silken back. It did not object, but twisted its head around, fangs bared, and attempted to continue its eager licking of his robes. He found there was a way of lodging his knees behind the wing joints that made him feel more secure, then looked around at the others. Neville had heaved himself over the back of the next thestral and was now attempting to swing one short leg over the creature's back. Luna was already in place, sitting side-saddle and adjusting her robes as though she did this every day. Ron, Hermione and Ginny, however, were still standing motionless on the spot, open-mouthed and staring.
"What?"
he said.
"How are we supposed to get on?" said Ron faintly, "when we can't see the things."
"Oh, it's easy," said Luna, sliding obligingly from her thestral and marching over to him, Hermione and Ginny. "Come here." She pulled them over to the other thestrals standing around and one by one managed to help them onto the back of their mount. All three looked extremely nervous as she wound their hands into the horse's mane and told them to grip tightly before she got back onto her own steed. "This is mad," Ron murmured, moving his free hand gingerly up and down his horse's neck. "Mad! If I could just see it!"
"You better hope it stays invisible," said Harry darkly. "We all ready, then?"
They all nodded, and he saw five pairs of knees tighten beneath their robes.
"Okay."
He looked down at the back of his thestral's glossy black head and swallowed.
"Ministry of Magic, visitors' entrance, London, then," he said uncertainly. "If you know where to go."
For a moment, Harry's thestral did nothing at all. Then, with a sweeping movement that nearly unseated him, the wings on either side extended. The horse crouched slowly, then rocketed upward so fast and so steeply that Harry had to clench his arms and legs tightly around the horse to avoid sliding backwards over its bony rump. He closed his eyes and pressed his face down into the horse's silky mane as they burst through the topmost branches of the trees and soared out into a blood-red sunset. Harry did not think he had ever moved so fast. The thestral streaked over the castle, its wide wings hardly beating. The cooling air was slapping Harry's face. Eyes screwed up against the rushing wind, he looked round and saw his five fellows soaring along behind him, each of them bent as low as possible into the neck of their thestral to protect themselves from his slipstream. They were over the Hogwarts grounds. They had passed Hogsmeade. Harry could see mountains and gullies below them. As the daylight began to fail, Harry saw small collections of lights as they passed over more villages, then a winding road on which a single car was beetling its way home through the hills.
"This is bizarre!"
Harry barely heard Ron yell from somewhere behind him, and he imagined how it must feel to be speeding along at this height with no visible means of support. Twilight fell. The sky was turning to a light dusky purple, littered with tiny silver stars, and soon only the lights of Muggle towns gave them any clue of how far from the ground they were, or how very fast they were travelling. Harry's arms were wrapped tightly around his horse's neck as he willed it to go even faster. How much time had elapsed since he had seen Sirius lying on the Department of Mysteries floor? How much longer would Sirius be able to resist Voldemort? All Harry knew for sure was that his godfather had neither done as Voldemort wanted, nor died,
for he was convinced that either outcome would have caused him to feel Voldemort's jubilation or fury course through his own body, making his scar sear as painfully as it had on the night Mr. Weasley was attacked. On they flew through the gathering darkness. Harry's face felt stiff and cold, his legs numb from gripping the Thestral's side so tightly. But he did not dare shift his position, lest he slip. He was deaf from the thundering rush of air in his ears, and his mouth was dry and frozen from the cold night wind. He had lost all sense of how far they had come. All his faith was in the beast beneath him, still streaking purposefully through the night, barely flapping its wings as it sped ever onwards. If they were too late, he's still alive, he's still fighting, I can feel it. If Voldemort decided Sirius was not going to crack, I'd know. Harry's stomach gave a jolt. The Thestral's head was suddenly pointing towards the ground, and he actually slid forwards a few inches along its neck. They were descending at last. He thought he heard a shriek behind him, and twisted around dangerously, but could see no sign of a falling body. Presumably they had all received a shock from the change of direction, just as he had. And now bright orange lights were growing larger and rounder on all sides. They could see the tops of buildings, streams of headlights like luminous insect eyes, squares of pale yellow that were windows. Quite suddenly, it seemed, they were hurtling towards the pavement. Harry gripped the Thestral with every last ounce of his strength, braced for a sudden impact. But the horse touched the dark ground as lightly as a shadow, and Harry slid from its back, looking around at the street where the overflowing skip still stood a short way from the vandalized telephone box, both drained of colour in the flat orange glare of the streetlights. Ron landed a short way off and toppled immediately from his Thestral onto the pavement. "Never again," he said, struggling to his feet. He made as though to stride away from his Thestral, but, unable to see it, collided with its hindquarters and almost fell over again. "Never, ever again. That was the worst." Hermione and Ginny touched down on either side of him. Both slid off their mounts a little more gracefully than Ron, though with similar expressions of relief at being back on firm ground. Neville jumped down, shaking, and Luna dismounted smoothly. "Where do we go from here, then?" she asked Harry in a politely interested voice, as though this was all a rather interesting day trip. "Over here," he said. He gave his Thestral a quick, grateful pat, then led the way quickly to the battered telephone box and opened the door. "Come on!" he urged the others as they hesitated. Ron and Ginny marched in obediently. Hermione, Neville and Luna squashed themselves in after them. Harry took one glance back at the Thestrals, now foraging for scraps of rotten food inside the skip, then forced himself into the box after Luna.